We are back discussing another mock draft. Alex Baruther joining me today on the show to go through the RotoWire top 100 mock draft that we did yesterday. Let's go balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You're the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy.
Welcome to the Balls Deep Podcast, brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I'm your host, Adam King, at AdamKing91 on Twitter. Joining me is Alex Baruther. We're going to go through another early mock draft, so not the one that we did a couple of weeks ago. We did a RotoWire one yesterday, 10 teams, 10 rounds, so top 100. It was a Roto draft, despite my drafting strategy. We'll go through my team, we'll go through Alex's team. So I was at pick 9. Alex was at pick 4. So sort of both ends. So it should be good. Let's bring him in. Alex, thanks for jumping on the show.
Yeah, of course. I was really happy to get a mock draft out. And I mean, I like the draft that you guys hosted as well. I'm trying to get more out this year. I know people love the mock draft content. I'm always interested to see like how people are approaching things this earlier in the year.
Yeah, it gives us something to talk about. There's not a lot, as you know, once Summer League is done. And I mean, we've had the Olympics, which has given us a little bit of extra content and stuff to watch, but that's almost done now. Touching on that, first of all, what did you think of the US yesterday scraping home against Serbia?
Nick was really pessimistic about it. He was convinced we were going to lose, the United States, I should say, you know, when they were down 17. Serbia was playing the game of their lives, I will say. Bogdanovic was going crazy, and I can't remember the other guy's name, Armanovic or something. No disrespect, not memorizing his name. It's crazy to me that with all the talent on the team, it still takes like Steph Curry absolutely like having to save everybody else on the team.
Yeah, it was I knew the US would come back. That's just that's sort of what they do. But I wasn't sure they'd win, but they did, obviously. And now they'll play France, who, I mean, you couldn't have scripted it any better. France in the lead-up didn't look great. Australia beat them. I don't think they won a warm-up game. And Germany sort of beat them in the preliminary rounds pretty convincingly. So to turn it around, I mean, Wemby's been great. Yabusele has been,
yes.
Somehow he's been great. I think the US actually would prefer to play France than Germany in the gold medal game. Would you agree with that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I will say part of the concern for me going into that gold medal game is Wembanyama against Germany shot so poorly and they still won. And it's like, if he just shoots like his average, they would have blown Germany out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I hope it's a good game. That's sort of all. Australia obviously aren't even there. We lost to the US in the women's last night. So we'll be playing for bronze. I mean, I don't think anyone here was expecting us to beat that US women's team is loaded. So yeah, it was, they did well to get to where they got to, and hopefully we can get a bronze. But anyway, let's change lanes and shift into the draft. As I said, this was a 10-team, 10-round draft, so very quick. We pumped this out in like half an hour. It didn't take long. Bright and early, it was 5:30 in the morning for me, but I'm up watching the Olympics anyway, so I figured I might as well jump in. I know there were a couple of auto drafts early, but I think by the end of it, we had everyone there. Was that right?
Yeah. At some point, I know it set auto draft after two picks, you know, if you're not in the draft room, but I do think some people jumped in. It was during the USA Serbia game, but it mostly took place at halftime. Actually, the timing ended up going pretty well. So a couple auto picks here and there.
So we'll just go through our teams, I guess, and any sort of picks that stand out to us as odd or too high, too low. You had pick four, which I think is actually a good pick this year, because basically your decision is made for you by who takes the top three, because we have a consensus top four. Were you considering anyone else there?
No, I was going to take SGA or Doncic, depending on who was there. So exactly like you said, I do really like that four spot this year.
I had pick nine, which in a 12 team I don't like, but in a 10 team I'm not too unhappy with it, because I think picking on that turn is okay this year. Because of the auto drafting, I think Halliburton fell to me at nine. I think he typically goes a little bit higher than that. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe I think it was Sloan may have auto picked Giannis there, and whether he would have taken Giannis, I don't know. But I'm happy to get Halliburton there. He's one of that bunch, that next bunch after the top four. I think who can go anywhere from sort of five through to ten. So I was okay with Halliburton. Any picks in that first? I mean, Joel Embiid, he's sort of someone that's people are divided on in terms of where to draft him. Where are you looking at him this year?
I actually don't remember the last time I drafted Joel Embiid. I've been worried about his injuries for his entire career. So I just find myself like being able to talk myself into plenty of other guys. Now, if I pick 10 or 11 in Embiid's on the board, I'm going to really start sweating it out, because I'm like, well, we all know this guy's like top two upside, basically, if he stays healthy and plays 65 games or 70. But yeah, both him and AD are really tough evaluations for me. And I would just almost prefer to avoid taking them in the first round, because I'm very risk averse. But again, if you do enough drafts, at some point it makes sense for you to chase upside. And the reality is, if you're doing a public draft in like a Yahoo league or something, like someone will take Joel Embiid at five or six. Like it'll happen.
It will, yeah. And I'm much like you. I don't think I've ever had him in a team. He usually go. I know that per game upside is there, but the injuries, and I'm just really worried. I think I've spoken about this on a couple of shows, but I think the fact that they brought Paul George in tells me that bringing in a really reliable, proven third scoring option means it all leans into them not wanting to push Embiid in the first 70, 80 games. And he's had multiple knee surgeries on the same knee. I really just don't see him playing more than, I don't know, I want to say 50, but I'll say 55 games is probably reasonable. And that's assuming he doesn't actually get injured. That's just with managing his current injuries. I'm okay to just ignore him and let someone else take him. But he went at pick seven here, which is sort of where he's going to go. It looks like his ADP, I think, will settle in that 7 to 8 range. Into round two, coming back, as I said, I was punting points, which in a roto, not necessarily a good strategy, but I still don't mind my team. So I went with Domantas Sabonis with my second pick. So I've basically locked up the league leader in assists and the league leader in rebounds there with my first two picks. Sabonis, as we know, is very good in terms of assists from the center position. So I like that pairing, despite the fact that I'm not really going to score. I don't really have a sort of a reliable 30-point scorer there. You went with Scotty Barnes. Now, Scotty Barnes is actually someone I considered at pick, so what, pick 12. Yeah. I've sort of seen him go anywhere from that the sort of early second round through to mid-second round, which is where you got him. So I think I'd be pretty happy there. What were your thoughts on Barnes?
Yeah, so in the mock draft you guys hosted, I also got Barnes in the second round. In that draft, I went Trae Young, then Scotty Barnes. In this draft, I go Doncic and Scotty Barnes. I love being able to get him in the second round. I think he has first round upside if everything breaks right. He projects as the number one option on the team, although, you know, how much he shares the ball with Quickly and Barrett when they, you know, get basically a full season together or a full training camp together, that kind of remains to be seen. And I will say, like, I do have some mild concerns that maybe his defense will regress, like his deflections were really high last year, steals and blocks, and that it's possible Toronto is near the bottom of the Eastern Conference, and then you start talking about like potentially them pulling the plug and all that stuff. They're not like a true bottom feeder, but I just think he has, you know, especially in a roto league, he's getting you every category. Mm-hmm. Basically, minus he's not like a volume 3-point shooter or anything, but I really like him this year.
Yeah, I like him too. And just pulling up, there is some ADP data available. We've got ours. Yahoo have got some early ADP data. In Yahoo, his ADP is 23. If you could get him at 23, I'd absolutely jump on him. I think he's going to end up going, as I said, in the sort of that middle of the second round, around 18, 19, and that's pretty much where you got him. Any other names in there? I mean, let's have a look. I don't know. I mean, Chet, is this sort of where he's going to go as well? Similar range to Barnes?
Yeah, I think so. I also really like Chet this year because them losing Giddey, I think officially puts Chet Holmgren as the team's third option on offense. Mm. You know, I don't think SGA is going to take on any more usage. So I think the touches that were going to Giddey, I think a lot of those will go to Jalen Williams and a lot of those will go to Holmgren. And so in addition to his defensive upside, I think he's just going to score more this year.
And I guess in the same vein as Embiid there, Kawhi Leonard went pick 19. Where is he someone you'd consider this year, or much like Embiid, are you just sort of leaving him for someone else?
You know, Kawhi for me, I'm just going to leave Kawhi alone. If he's on the board for me, I would say around pick 30, I'm going to start mm-hmm. thinking about it. Depending on my team construction and what sort of league it is. Like if it's a best ball league, I think there's, you know, you have a plenty of justification to take him there. But honestly, I'm just not considering him until pick 30. The injury upside is too big. I talked about this with Nick on the podcast. It's like, not only does he have the injury upside, I think the Clippers are going to not be good. I think they're going to struggle a lot in the Western Conference. And then if he's banged up and it's March, it's like, why even push it? Like, would they just pull the plug on him? And then if he's not playing, their season's over. And then Harden going to play? It just could. I feel like it could all sort of just really crumble for Kawhi and the Clippers late in the year.
Yeah, it could. Their team's certainly not looking. I mean, you take out Paul George and they really don't have that third wheel now on offense. And the replacement, I suppose, if we want to put him in that category, is Derek Jones. And he is not a one-for-one replacement, as we know. They don't have a center who can take on more of an offensive load. I mean, Zubats is who he is. And then you've got, like, Terrence Mann, but he'll occasionally blow up. But other than that, he's been fairly sort of modest throughout his career. Into the third round, coming back around, you went with Alper and Şengün, someone that I'm relatively high on as well this year. So what's that, pick 24? Is that sort of where, like, I mean, I think feedback would probably be that is maybe a small reach to get him. But, I mean, in a draft like this where everything's skewed a little bit. But, again, in a roto, he does a lot of things. He doesn't really hurt you. I mean, his free throws are sort of iffy, but he doesn't hit a lot of threes, but he can hit threes. So I like him in a roto build. What are your thoughts on him?
I think it also may have been a small reach, but I really wanted to just get, I'm trying to focus on this more this year, just right away, get a guard forward center, just like, so I don't have to worry about positions at all. And I can just open up my draft a little bit. And so I thought he fit there. Yeah. I think it is a little bit of a reach. This is technically the third round in our 10 team league, but you know, in a 12 team league, it'd be a little sooner. But this is a really, I mean, you have a lot of options in this range, I think. I considered a ton of different guys. I considered Booker and Maxey. I considered Brunson. I thought about Jaren Jackson. I even thought about Mobley, to be honest, for a second. But I just ended up going with Şengün because he's so young. He plays so well. His floor is really high. Mm-hmm. And I wanted a center. And I just, again, for roto settings, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, and he, as you said, he does fill that center spot, which you tend to need to get early in drafts. I went with Jaren Jackson, who you just mentioned. Basically, for the blocks, I think he could have a pretty good season this year after the debacle last year with all the injuries and things like that. I think He'll be back playing his more traditional role as the third scoring option, not the first scoring option. He's got Zach Edey there now. So if we think back to when Stephen Adams was there, that was when Jaren Jackson was at his best. So I'm not saying Edey is going to be as good as Adams straight away, but he is a traditional center like Adams was, and will allow Jackson to roam around a bit. I'm not sure his blocks get back to where they were during that Defensive Player of the Year campaign, but certainly I could see some improvements from last year. So I was happy to get him here. I know he's not a huge rebounder, but I've got Sabonis there. So I'm fine taking Jaren Jackson in the third round. Coming back around, I went with DeJounte Murray. I think one of those players, some analysts have been pretty high on the move to New Orleans, some haven't. I think it's a good move. I think it gives him an opportunity to really establish himself as an elite point guard in the NBA. Again, Roto, he's not a high scorer, but with my initial strategy, that's a great fit. But he's a good rebounder, gets defensive numbers, hits threes, he's efficient from the free throw line. So I really like DeJounte in this range. What did you think of the trade? Do you think it's a win for him and for New Orleans?
I think I like it in real life more than I do fantasy, because I don't think CJ McCollum was a true point guard. And yeah, I think you solve the issue by just having DeJounte Murray in there. You get better defense at that spot. You shift McCollum to his natural position at shooting guard. Now, they don't have a center.
No.
And I mean, frankly, this is a really difficult team for me to project. I mean, it's just... Yeah. Not only is their starting five a bunch of relatively high usage rate guys, I should say like starting four are relatively high usage guys, but then you're dealing with like Trey Murphy and Herb Jones off the bench. But I think in fantasy for Murray, it's probably a lateral move. I don't really perceive it as especially like harmful for him, because he's now away from the massive usage of Trey Young, but now he's also competing with like McCollum and Ingram and Zion. Their usage rates are lower. It's just, there's a lot to factor in, but I think if you're picking him at 32, I don't think that's a pick that like kills you.
No, I think it was fine. Yeah, like I said, I don't mind it there at all. You went with Paolo Banchero, who is another guy that in a draft, I think it's one of our draft only leagues that I'm doing. I actually got Şengün and Banchero in that league as well, so I'm relatively high on Banchero. I know he's, if you look at his rank, this looks silly because his rank is impacted by some of the, like, his free throw shooting and things like that. But Banchero looked great last year. I think he's the trajectory that he's on is pretty incredible. Like, I think this year the Magic are going to be good. They've added KCP as a nice proven sort of wing defender, solid floor spacer. Franz Wagner looked really good during the Olympics. I think Banchero is going to take that next step this year. So I'd be okay getting him here. Your thoughts?
I thought it might have been a little bit of a reach. I mean, 37 is significantly higher than, like you said, his rankings would imply.
Mm.
But at some point, I think you're around pick 30 or 40. You know, how many guys left on the board are like real number one options for their team, and number one options that are pretty young and on a solid squad that doesn't have a chance of tanking? I mean, it's a pretty small list, you know. Like, after Banchero, you know, Cade Cunningham went, and he totally fits that description, but the Pistons are horrible and they're harder to trust. And of course, like, Jimmy Butler fits this description, but he's old and injury prone. And I actually even thought about Morant here, who went about 10 picks later at pick 45. But just ultimately decided to go with Banchero because I think guard is deeper later in the draft.
Coming back around, you went with Pascal Siakam. I mean, I don't think he needs a lot of discussion. He is who he is. He's signed a long-term deal, so his role's not going to change. So you got him, what, 40, 44? Mm-hmm. That's sort of where he fits in that 40 to 50 range. I don't know. Anything to say there?
Honestly, not much to say there. I mean, he did, I think his, you know, he started the year so shooting so badly from three when he was in Toronto that I actually think, you know, he's, this is a good place to draft him, even though the rankings from last year might say differently. And on Fantrax too, I mean, I personally really value guys, not just on Fantrax, but on Fantrax, Siakam is a forward center. And I really value like multi-position eligibility when it comes to drafting. I mean, like the amount that you can do if guys get hurt on your team or you're trying to maximize games played just by having guys be able to fill different spots. I think for certain guys, that could add like a round of value, you know, over someone who is like just a guard or just a forward. So to me, this is like, just like you said, it's kind of boring, but it just shores up my team.
I went with Darius Garland. This was sort of a pick that, I mean, I'm okay with getting Garland. It wasn't my favorite pick. He's coming off a pretty bad year. I had him in two leagues, I think, so I know how bad his year was. I think he was outside the top 100 from memory. He sort of plateaued a bit and if not regressed, I think, over the last year or two. But last year, I think he had a number of head, neck issues, right, injuries, things like that. And so although he played, I want to say he played like 50 games or something. 57 games. I would say he was at 100% for maybe 30 of those, 35. So I thought he looked better down the stretch over the back end of the season. So I'm okay getting him here. I'm not excited about it, but I think he'll be okay. I still think the upside is there for him to be a top 30 player, but I don't know whether he gets there with Donovan Mitchell alongside him. But I mean, what are your thoughts on Garland this year?
I'm really not worried about Garland. I think, like you said, I think his last year was really affected by injuries. And I think at some point Donovan Mitchell just kind of grabbed hold of the team, and then Garland, you know, just sort of was resigned to just, you know, making sure that, you know, he wasn't going to disrupt too much because Mitchell was on fire and had a first round season. So you get him at pick 49. I'm completely fine with that. I mean, you might think you reach, but if I can get Garland there in like any league, I would encourage people to pick him there. I don't, again, like, you know, early in drafts, I like to think of like, will this move potentially lose me my league? You know, if I draft this guy too early. And then later in the draft, you know, I switched my thinking to like, could this win me my league? Drafting Darius Garland at 49 is like by far, but very small possibility of that being the reason your team struggles in fantasy.
Anyway, I took him next pick. I went with Nick Claxton. I actually wanted Jalen Duren here, but Noah took him one pick ahead of me, which is interesting because I had Noah on my show earlier in the week and I talked about I was relatively high on Duren. I'm okay taking him at sort of 50, 60. And Noah was like, no, I think that's a reach. I think it's too high. And then he went and drafted him at that spot. So I don't know whether I talked him into it or whether he did it out of spite or, I mean, I did listen back to him and Karan and it sounded like he sort of just filled a need for him. But I'm actually okay with Claxton there. He's sort of one of those sneaky top 40 players that you don't really pay attention to unless you have him on your roster. The Nets are going to be rubbish this year. So Claxton, he's really there. I mean, they've got some interesting young centers. They've got Dayron Sharpe there. They've got Noah Clowney as well. But I think it's Claxton's spot. I wouldn't be surprised if he does a little bit more offensively, double-digit rebounds, 2.5 blocks. So I actually think Claxton is fairly safe here, other than that, I guess, the shutdown risk if the Nets bottom out at some point.
Yeah, you know, I think it's less likely for centers, especially someone like Claxton, that they get shut down. But the point's fair. Like I also generally try to avoid drafting from teams that are horrible, especially early. But I think this is a fine spot for Claxton. His, you know, I thought he was going to be better last year. You know, I think in the rankings, what killed him was that he lost like 8% on his field goal percentage, which is a lot for a center. And his blocks also went down. And that's a really tough combination, right? When like those are your two categories. Yeah. But I think this year, I mean, again, they should. They signed him to a 4-year, $100 million deal. The team is going to be bad. They should want to try to give him the ball more. You know, he averaged 2 assists a game last year. That was a career high. And yeah, I mean, this is a good zone for him. Him or Durin in this spot. I think I would also prefer Durin, but yeah, Claxton's fine this year.
Yeah, I was okay. Now you went, we went with back-to-back Bridges here. You went with Mikhail Bridges before Nick took Miles Bridges. Mikhail Bridges. So moving, speaking of Brooklyn, very disappointing last year, but I think part of that was just the fact that people were drafting him too high. So, but I mean, even still, he disappointed. So I think his ADP this year settles in that 50 to 60 range, and you got him at, what, 50, 57, which is bang on. I guess are we sort of expecting him to go back to being more like the Phoenix version of Mikal Bridges here, where he isn't expected to score 20, 22 points a game, but he can focus a little bit more on his defensive stuff. They run the offense through him a bit.
Yeah, I'm basically expecting sort of a mix between what he was able to do in Brooklyn and what he did in Phoenix. I'm hoping he can get his defensive stats back up, you know, if he does lose some scoring. But we also know Tom Thibodeau loves to run guys into the ground. So if he's suddenly seeing like 37 minutes a game and, you know, this Knicks rotation is not necessarily that easy to figure out, but it should either be him or Randall for second leading scorer on the team. As sad as that is to say, especially because like I don't know what to do with Randall this year. That's a completely different discussion. Yeah. But yeah, I think I'm pretty happy getting him in this Bridges in this range.
Coming back around to you, another, I guess, unexciting pick, Tyler Herro. He is who he is. He's a sort of low 20s scorer, can get some assists. He's actually a decent rebounder from the guard position, Tyler Herro. Injuries, I guess, are probably people sort of associate missed games with him a little bit. Is that sort of something that worries you here, or you're fine taking him here and just taking a bit of a chance?
It worries me a little bit. He's about 1 year away from me being like, this guy's too injury prone, you know, like one more season of like 60 games. And I'm like, I don't know about this, but I also don't trust Jimmy Butler to stay healthy either.
No.
And so there's just, and this has been my, I've been a Herro guy for the past like 3 years, just continuously drafting him because I'm like, there's going to be so many nights where he is the number one option on this team, where he's going to have to try to score 30. For Miami, and I think his floor is really high. He's basically like a floor of like, I mean, last year was sort of his worst year besides his rookie year, but I don't know. I a high floor guy to me who has a path to more usage.
Right. So Herro. Okay. So this next pick for me was, look, I really like Trey Murphy, and I think he can have a good year. This is probably a reach, so I took him with the 9th pick of the 7th round, so 69. I think that's probably about a round too high, but it was more, I won't say it was a panic move because I had him in my queue, but yeah, I wasn't sold on it. I'm still not sold on it. I think if Brandon Ingram wasn't there, I would be, but I don't know. I think Murphy last year it took him a while to get going. He had an early season knee injury. I thought he actually looked really good in the final month, 6 weeks of the season. So I'm not annoyed with this pick, but I'm not super excited about it. Unless Ingram is moved at some point, which it doesn't look like he will be before the season. I don't know. Is Murphy someone you're high on this year, or?
In theory, basically I echo everything you said where it's like, I really like Murphy's upside. I think he deserves more minutes. I think he should be asked to do more in the offense, but it's a really, like we talked about with DeJounte Murray, the rotation becomes tough to project. I think like the upside, he can play 30 minutes a game with the rotation as it is, but you're sort of, I think, hoping for Ingram and Zion injuries for him to reach his full potential here, which are actually pretty likely. So I don't hate the idea of that. But you said it. His March and April was basically like 18 points a game, you know, six rebounds on efficient shooting. And he was still, you know, like in that 80 to 100 range the past 2 years in less than ideal situations. So you drafting him like 10 spots before that to me is not a, it's not really a crazy reach or anything.
No. And I mean, once you get into, as we know, once you get into the sort of sixth, seventh, eighth round, it's not as much of a reach. If you're growing around higher to get someone, it's not like in the second round. So it's fine. And I actually, I interviewed Jake Madison yesterday as part of my interview series. And we were talking about the Pelicans and the rotations and a lot about the center spot and the fact that Daniel Theis is currently their starting center. And he sort of alluded to them experimenting with a lot of small ball lineups, which they're going to have to if they don't sign a center between now and opening night. And Trey Murphy is someone that came up as potentially someone that could fill a small ball center role along with Zion, because Trey Murphy is 6'10", so he's not small. I wouldn't want him playing center against someone like Jokic or Rudy right. Gobert or these big guys. But in certain situations, maybe they do sort of roll Murphy out there as part of a small ball lineup, which opens up some more minutes for him. I'm not saying it'll lead to winning basketball because it might not. But anyway, we'll see what they do there. Anthony Simons, I took in the next round. Look, I think I'm fine with him there. I thought he was okay last year. That injury early in the season sort of derailed momentum that he'd built up through draft season. But I thought when he was healthy, he played well. Drafting anyone from the Trailblazers worries me a little bit based on what we've seen the last year or two. So I'm not sold that this will. That I'll enjoy this pick when in February, March. But I think for the first 3-4 months of the season, as long as he's healthy, I think he's probably better than this.
Yeah, I drafted him in spots last year, and it ended up burning me, but I'm not opposed to doing it again if you're giving him to me at pick 72 like you had, because I projected him as like I thought he had top 40 upside last year. I mean, to me, you know, we were doing the projections, and I'm looking at on off-court numbers, and I'm trying to figure it out. And I was like, this guy's basically Zach LaVine, as Zach LaVine was putting up top 40 seasons. I think if I won't be surprised if Simons continues to sit at like the 72 spot. I mean, he's extremely anonymous as like a player, like in your casual leagues, who people would be like, who is Anthony Simons? So he may just drop that far, and I'd be happy to scoop him up there because he's a 20 point per game scorer.
All right, moving through. Seventh pick of the eighth round. You went with Jonathan Kuminga. Last year, I guess we consider it a breakout. It took a while to get there. It didn't look good early in the season, but once we got sort of into the back half of the year, he started playing more. He was efficient. He was scoring the basketball, rebounding. The Warriors sort of have to give him minutes. I would hope. I mean, Steve Kerr does make some interesting rotational decisions, but certainly common sense could prevail here. He's going to play more. He's going to start. What are you sort of envisaging for his role this year on a team that typically doesn't like to give heavy minutes to their young guys?
I mean, I think it's almost a guarantee he's their second leading scorer. I don't know who else. I mean, unless you're predicting a Wiggins bounce back, I don't know who else on this team is getting close to 20 points per game or even has the, like, Pajemski. I mean, we like Pajemski, but he's not 20 points a game.
No.
I know there's some debate. Like, is he going to start? Is he going to come off the bench? I mean, maybe they just do the Jordan Poole thing with him, which is like he comes off the bench, but he plays 30 minutes a game and it just kind of doesn't matter. I've been like looking at his projections. We have our projections in at RotoWire, and I'm like, we have him at like 18 points a game. I'm like, is this too low? Like, could he score like 23 a game just because who else is scoring on this roster? you know, maybe he won't continue shooting 50% from the field. Maybe he'll go down to 46% from the field or something like that. But you know, not only that, Draymond's injury prone and older. Curry's older and injury prone. Like, I think there's going to be some opportunities for Kuminga to like have a lot of the offense in his hands.
Yeah, and if you go through, just pulled up their sort of their projected roster and that sort of thing. As you said, Curry is clearly number one in terms of the offensive hierarchy. But behind him, Pajemski, Wiggins, Green. I guess Wiggins is someone. He bounces back, but I'm not convinced at all. So it's really Kuminga, because then it's Melton, who a really good player, but not a volume scorer. Buddy Hield is the other one, I suppose, who could come in and take some more shots, but I don't think it'd be enough to sort of supplant Kuminga there as the second leading scorer. I think you're right. I think it probably is Kuminga, and if someone who is the second leading scorer on a team like the Warriors, he's going to need to score over 20 points. So, yeah, I think that's a nice pick. You went with youth again with your next pick, Brandon Miller, who had a good rookie season, I thought. Obviously, Wemby and Chet got all of the attention. But if you sort of erase them from the discussion, I thought Brandon Miller was pretty impressive. There was some people that weren't sort of sold on him coming into the season. But, yeah, look, I thought he was solid. He obviously benefited from the fact that LaMelo Ball basically missed another season. Mark Williams, not that they play the same position, but, there were injuries. There were all sorts of things going on. But I thought he made the most of a favourable situation. And coming into this year, I think the Hornets have to be happy with what he put together last year.
Yeah, I wasn't really convinced on Miller either. I was pretty down on him after his summer league performance coming into the year. And he was droppable like for the first 2-3 months of the season. I mean, it wouldn't have killed you. No, it would have killed you later when he went off when LaMelo got hurt. He has the upside to become Charlotte's second option on offense. Whether he can actually like wrangle that away from Miles Bridges for real is a different question. And how much LaMelo Ball coming back and in theory being healthy is another question. But you're at pick 84. He showed enough to me where it's like, you know, second year breakout potential, I think is there with him. He's not like a big assist guy or anything, but it's a fine spot for me to feel like I'm not risking much by grabbing him here.
No, and he was 116th last year in 9-cap, but as you said, that start to the season was terrible. So you sort of, if you forget about that, he's top 90, top 80. So you took him sort of at value, and then these young guys, they're all upside at this point. So let's see what he can do. Now, you went the opposite direction with your next pick.
I know.
We're working that way, aren't we? No, sorry. Well, with your next bit, we'll get to it. But I went with Isaiah Hartenstein. So I was really just looking here to lock up rebounds, some defensive stuff. He's very sneaky on the defensive end, so he'll get you a steal and a block. Again, punting points, he's a perfect fit. I'm going to get last in scoring, but I think he's moved to OKC. Whether he starts or not, I don't know whether we've come up with a consensus decision on whether he starts, but I think he's going to play 26 minutes, whether he's coming off the bench or starting, because they're paying him a lot of money and they need some size out there alongside Chet. I think Hartenstein at pick 89, he was better than that last year. He just does stuff. I'm certainly very comfortable drafting Hartenstein there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a Hartenstein guy for a few years. His per minute numbers were always great, and he finally got a chance to demonstrate that in New York, and then look what it turned into for him. I agree with you, Doug. It's like who knows if Hartenstein's gonna start, and I also am of the opinion of like, I don't think it'll matter because I think he's just almost like locked into 26 minutes a game. Some alongside Chet, some not. And I think he fits perfectly within their offense. I mean, it's an OKC team that they share the ball, and you know, they're not opposed to like letting a center do some work out there. And that's the thing too, because Hartenstein's a great passer, but Thibodeau didn't even really let him explore that much of it as he had in the past. So I think I still think he has upside despite probably not playing 30 minutes a game.
No, and I mean, he was 74th last year in 25 minutes, basically 8 and 8 with a steal and a block, 2.5 assists. And as you said, I think those assist numbers could – I mean, he's playing on a team that has obviously Shea and has Jalen Williams. And so there are offensive sort of hubs there, but I still think he could get up over 3. So, yeah, I'm, as I said, certainly very comfortable drafting him. Coming back around, I thought Chris Paul was just too good to pass up on, given what his role is going to be. Again, if they're a bad team, which they potentially could be, there's some shutdown risk, that sort of thing. But, I mean, getting him here at 92, I think he could be 8 assists, 1.4 steals maybe. He's certainly not going to be the player he was 5 years ago, but I still think he's going to have a really good role and an important role for San Antonio, both on and off the court. So, I think getting someone with upside in those two categories, I think his scoring could go up slightly, but I just think he'll have a better season despite being a year older, playing in a role that I think fits him, and we've seen it. We've seen him thrive in this role when he came into OKC a few years ago. He took them to the playoffs. He had the same impact in Phoenix. So I'm sort of excited to see what he can do alongside Wemby and Devin Vassell and these young guys in San Antonio.
Yeah, their backcourt rotation is like a little, like they got Trey Jones there and Castle's coming in. But I do like this pick. I think he'll have more of an opportunity this year to run San Antonio's offense and be more impactful than he was in Golden State. I mean, Golden State had such an established offense. He didn't necessarily make a ton of sense with their team. I don't think he was bad for them by any stretch, but I think you're exactly like you said, they're bringing him in to get this offense sort of under control and like functional around Wembanyama and teach Wembanyama some stuff. And assists, just like in a vacuum, assists are not easy to come by at the end of drafts. So taking a guy with upside for 6, 7, 8 assists in this spot, almost regardless of who he is I think completely worth it.
Now, as I said, you went in the opposite direction to Brandon Miller with your next pick and went with Chris Middleton. We speak of injury prone players and he falls into that category after the last 2 years. I guess what was sort of your thought process here? Because there's not, I mean, there is upside, I guess, but he's not the player that he was, but still feels relatively safe per game at least.
That was my thought. And look, he played really well in the playoffs. I know Giannis and Dame weren't there, but in that series against Indiana, he averaged 25 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, Chris Middleton is very good. I've watched him for his entire career. I just think there's nothing to lose by drafting him at pick 97. Like if he's bad, drop him. And that's sort of what we're talking about. And I felt like maybe he doesn't have the top like 40 upside that he used to have, because now he's definitively the number 3 option. And like you said, he's been injured. He had surgery on both of his ankles. He's 32 years old, all that stuff. But if you are drafting someone at around pick 100 that you could see getting to like 60th in just in per game value, I think you're just making a fine pick overall. And I think that to me is relatively realistic.
So that's our teams. As I said, very quick draft, 10 teams, 10 rounds. I guess your thoughts on your team, were you happy with your build? Anything you would have changed, any sort of picks that you regret?
I like my team. I think I'm a really big fan of, to not toot my own horn too much, but like my 1 through 5. I mean, Doncic, Scottie Barnes, Şengün, Banchero, Siakam. it's just a lot of guys who do everything. Like all of these guys score, they rebound, they pass the ball, various levels of defense in there. But it's just, to me, that's a really just well-balanced roto team. After that, I'm not like 100% sold on the rest of my team. Like I'm not in love with my Bridges, Hero, Kuminga, Miller, Middleton picks. So that's something for me, I think, to think about when I do drafts in the future, like who else is around that maybe I should expand sort of my cheat sheet a little bit and shoot for more upside. But I don't know. I mean, I know you were drafting for head to head, but I still think you put together a good team overall. And like, honestly, I think I think you can punt a category in roto and it's fine. Like I think punting a category is completely fine. And I mean, even I feel like you have no reason to worry about your team, even though you drafted for settings that weren't what you expected. It's just a good team.
Yeah, no, look, I don't mind my team. As I said, I really like the pairing of Haliburton and Sabonis at the top. And then getting Jaren Jackson in the third round feels really safe. DeJounte, I like. Garland is, I wasn't high, but I'm okay. The Claxton pick, I don't mind. Murphy was, for me, a little bit of a reach, but as you get deeper into the drafts, it doesn't matter as much. I like Hartenstein there. So, no, look, I still like my team. And, I mean, part of it for me, for fantasy, is it's something you want to enjoy, and so you draft players that you like. And so one guy I want to just touch on very quickly, speaking of players that I like, is LaMelo Ball. So he went at pick 21. Where are you on him this year? Because he's obviously had a couple of really bad seasons in terms of injuries. The fact that they're always ankle injuries is concerning. Are you sort of in the camp of I'm not drafting him unless he falls to a certain spot, or are you okay reaching because of the upside that we have seen?
Yeah, I think he's a first round talent, but he's young enough to where like I give younger guys more of a benefit of the doubt when it comes to injuries. I just think it's just easier for them to recover and they haven't accumulated over time as much as older players. But for someone like LaMelo, if he's sitting there for me at the end of the second round, I'm really going to think about it. And there's a pretty strong chance I do it, to be honest, because there's not that many guys with that much upside who are still young.
Yeah, no, I've talked about him and I'm high on him. So yeah, I'm okay taking him in that back end of the second round. I don't know if I'd go. So if I had pick, did I take him? Hang on. I may have taken him with in a draft that I'm in. Let me have a look. Did I? I did. So in the draft only league that I'm in, I had the eighth pick. So it's a 12-team league. So I had the fifth pick of the second round, which is, 17? And I drafted LaMelo there. So that's okay. Like I did think it's probably a bit of a reach, but I knew he wasn't coming back to me in the third round. And I paired him with Donovan Mitchell, who I got in the first round. And I said right at the top of the show, I was in that range of sort of that 6 to 10 range, which I don't like this season. And I went with Donovan Mitchell. I could have gone with Durant, Edwards, Haliburton was gone. Haliburton is who I wanted, but he went the pick before. So, I'm high on LaMelo. This season, coming up season, but in the next couple of months, what's on the agenda for RotoWire and for you and Nick and your show?
I would say all the usuals. I mean, if people are familiar with RotoWire, I mean, we just posted this first mock draft. You've been working really hard for us, honestly, on the outlooks. You know, we post fantasy outlooks to RotoWire and to Yahoo as well. And then we're just going to continue with sort of the regular scheduled content. We're going to post, you know, rankings. We're going to post sleepers, bus articles. We have different tools on the website. We're going to be doing the podcast, and it's just going to be just a constant stream of content for us, like it usually is.
Yeah, there isn't really a shutdown anymore. No. In terms of the content that's available to us as writers and analysts, there's not as much, but we start prepping, as we're already doing, prepping for the new season well ahead of time. But people, degenerates who love fantasy, love listening to shows and reading content. So, no, look, good to know all the content is coming out. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex, at Berutha Alex. It's not at, it used to be, what was it? At NBA Rutha.
Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah. I changed it because it was not easy to say and not easy to spell. Like, I'm like, I should probably just get more official with this.
Yeah. So at Berutha Alex, I'm at Adam King 91. We are at FBI Basketball. Like, subscribe, thumbs up to this show, to our YouTube channel. Any likes that we can get. Oh, there's a friend of the show, Matt Carmody. Thanks, guys. Yeah, look, Matt's always watching our shows. I think he watches everyone's shows. So he's in Ireland, I believe. Thanks for watching along, Matt. And that will do for today's show. Jump into our Discord if you wanted to join our, as I said, I'm in a draft-only league and we're still rolling those out. The Yahoo ADP data is basically out. I think their ranks come out in the next week or two. I'm probably going to get Dan Titus on to talk about those as soon as he's sort of ready and he's got the content ready to go. So that will be coming out. And then my regular shows will be starting. I think I've got 5 a week this year. So it's going to be interesting to see how I fit those in. But looking forward to another good season. That will do for today. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.